I am far more concerned than what's happening at the editorial page by what's happening in news pages.
Molly Hemingway speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
In news pages, that old idea that we had for a few decades of aiming toward objectivity has just been completely thrown out the window.
And this is a generalization, but I think it bears out. And again, I mean, even 5-10 years ago, it would have sounded crazy that I'd be saying this, but I mean, I think it is the case. You have to view the explicit goal of most of the major journalistic institutions in this country as electing Democrats. And when they aren't electing Democrats, they're trying to push the Democratic Party further left.
You can watch and listen to a recording of journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway's Q&A from our 2020 Making the Case conference. It's available in both video and audio formats for a tax-deductible contribution of $250. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Why don't we see pro-life Republicans doing this? And I'm talking about our lawmakers and maybe even our president. It's quite clear that the Democratic Party, at least as it is constituted in Washington, D.C., has gone all in and more on abortion. They have advocated views that only 10, 15 years ago would have been considered radically heartless. Abortion through all 9 months, including a child that survives an abortion, should be killed. And that's what the Democratic Party, at least in Washington, has been pushing. Why haven't pro-life Republicans made them say it out loud? Why haven't pro-life Republicans said, do you support what Roe actually permits, which is the killing of a child, an innocent child, either in the womb through all 9 months of pregnancy or even after that child has been born in the midst of an abortion? Yes or no? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to talk about a proposed strategy for pro-life Republicans. Hadley Arkus joins us. He's Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College, founder and director of the James Wilson Institute for Natural Rights and the American Founding. He's architect of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act, and he's author of several books, including Constitutional Illusions and Anchoring Truths, The Touchstone of the Natural Law, and a recent column for Public Discourse titled Josh Hawley and the Advantages of Jiu-Jitsu. Hadley, welcome back.
Oh, always good to be with you, Todd. Thanks for inviting me along.
So what criticism has Missouri Senator Josh Hawley leveled recently against the conservative legal movement?
Well, he was inflamed by the Bostock in Harris cases on the transgendered, the suddenly defined, not only a decision on transgender, but almost a new metaphysic that, as one apt critic remarked, that it's not a matter of Anthony Stevens having the freedom to dress as he wishes, but that everybody else around him would be obliged to respect his judgment about his sex. And if they weren't willing to speak that untruth around him, if they gave any indication of rejecting it, of being dubious about it, they could put themselves at peril because they could be helping create a hostile work environment. So here was a situation in which the court was coming to a judge that it couldn't really give any constitutional import to the objective difference in nature that separates males from females. And Josh was inflamed by this, and he said, this is what conservative jurisprudence has given us, that we have people steeped in the so-called doctrines of originalism and textualism, and they couldn't see through this. In other words, nothing in these principles they were thought to have absorbed would have made them any more acute in recognizing that the core of the matter here, the core that had to be seen, is the objective differences in nature between men and women, differences in the way men and women are constituted, are in their reproductive organs, and in differences that run down to their cells. That there's something, what is there about conservative jurisprudence that always wants to dance around, studiously avoid that moral question that stands at the core of things, especially a certain diffidence about recognizing inescapable truths? I think this is what Hawley, he was reacting to that, but his reaction overflowed to the way. Well, how do we get these judges? These people were selected so carefully. They were vetted by the people who were high priests of originalism and are adepts in originalism and textualism. And he could raise the question, what has happened with abortion? We've had, in 1992, when the court looked as though it was going to overrule abortion in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, but it didn't. At that moment, 8 of the 9 judges were appointed by Republicans. As one friend, an appellate court lawyer, veteran lawyer, remarked, what is it going to take for the Republicans and the conservatives to get to 5 reliable votes after all of these years? So Hawley was raising questions about how we selected these people. How would we get people who would do things like this to us and do things that kind of really embarrass the people who vetted Neil Gorsuch and were standing behind him when they selected him? But his argument went to abortion. And his excitement about this, his anger, he insisted he wasn't going to confirm anyone judge who did not declare forthrightly against abortion. Well, you know, what's the old saying about sex in Victorian England? Just don't do anything that scares the horses. And this kind of a move to simply say, we're not going to accept anyone who does not declare flatly against Roe versus Wade. Yeah, it's the sort of thing that I would like and that I would certainly welcome. But in a closely divided Senate, especially with the Republicans having pro-choice members, people who were a little nervous to separate themselves, suggest that there's any want of conviction on their part in sustaining a woman's right to choose abortion. People like Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski, a strong position like that saying, we insist that the judges declare themselves forthrightly to overrule Wilson versus Wade is something very likely to drive off the so-called moderate Republican voters. So it's a futile strategy. I said it was like that scene in the British Review Beyond the Fringe where the RAF commander is trying to talk his people into a kamikaze mission. He says to one of them, Smedley, we need someone to make a futile gesture. But this would be a futile gesture. But what I suggested is that instead of doing that, instead of using this kind of frontal assault, demand that people just take a strong line right away to overrule Roe, that you use jujitsu that has turned the matter against the Democrats. And because the Democrats have, most people in the country don't know the radical nature of the holding in Roe versus Wade. But more than that, they don't know the radical construction that the Democrats have put on it in recent years.
Talk about the Democratic track record when it comes to abortion in the Senate.
Well, the Senate, the Democrats simply will not. They're always asking about Roe versus Wade as a super-duper precedent, and there's no doubt they stand behind the notion of abortion in Roe versus Wade. But the public is really unaware of what the real holding was in Roe versus Wade. The people don't understand that even in Roe versus Wade, and its companion case of Doe versus Bolton, an abortion could be had through the entire length of the pregnancy, even to the point where the child comes out. Supposedly, it could be restrictions on abortion, but except that an exception must be made for the health of the mother, but health was defined, as you may recall, as simply mental health. In other words, if a woman would simply be depressed at being denied the abortion she prefers to have, that itself would be a ground in which to order the abortion. But what people don't realize, even up to now, so many people have thought that the right to abortion holds only for the first trimester, the first 3 months of the pregnancy. Most people did not realize that right extended throughout the length of the pregnancy. And what they especially don't realize now is that in the understanding of the Democrats and the way they vote now in the Congress, that right to abortion is a right that extends beyond the pregnancy itself and involves nothing less than the right to kill a child who survives the abortion. This has been the point of our Born Alive Infants Protection Act, the one we did in 2002, but that bill was stripped of its penalties at the time for the sake of averting a veto from Bill Clinton, a concession I didn't think we had to make because I didn't think Clinton was going to veto that bill. But we came back a few years ago after the killings going on in Philadelphia with Dr. Kermit Goslow's abattoir there. We formed a committee with the support of the House Judiciary Committee to restore the penalties that had been stripped from that bill. And that's the new bill that was brought before the Congress. And when that bill came in, the Democrats have now shifted their position from a willingness just to vote for it as a modest bill, just as long as they're not at the records. But now the Democrats have hardened against it, so that virtually every Democrat in the House, except for five or six, voted against the bill to protect children born alive from abortions. And when that bill was introduced in the Senate, finally, by Senator Sass from Nebraska, the Democrats put up a filibuster against it and kept it from getting the 60 votes needed to get it up for a real vote. So in other words, the Democrats in the Senate have now aligned themselves perfectly with the Democrats in the House. And this has become the new position of the Democratic Party. So now even before this, some of us have taken the line that what the Republicans should do is ask the judicial candidate to explain the reach of Roe versus Wade, how far it goes. But that is now what can be done with far more effect if Senator Hawley and a few of his allies now on the Judiciary Committee simply took that line. And they took the occasion of these hearings to draw out the Democrat. Tell them, you would say Roe versus Wade. Okay, do you tell us your understanding of the holding in Roe versus Wade and how far it reaches? We can ask the candidates, do you accept this notion that this argument made by former President Obama that this bill to protect children born alive is unconstitutional, that it is incompatible with the constitutional right articulated in Roe versus Wade? Do you accept that? In other words, draw out the Democrats on that point to say, do you accept this notion that the right to abortion is not confined to the pregnancy and involves nothing right less than the right to kill a child born alive? Now, we know from the surveys over the years that it's rarely been more than like 24% of the public that have been willing to support an abortion for any reason throughout the entire length of the pregnancy. But when it comes now to killing a child born alive, we can expect this would administer a real jolt to the public. As I recall, there's a survey on punishing of Dr. Goslow in Philadelphia, and I think like 80% of the people surveyed thought he should be severely punished. It would be a shock to the Democrats, I think, for them to be forced if Josh Hawley could simply use his position on the committee in asking questions to he and a couple of colleagues to simply draw this out, challenge the Democrat. Tell us what you mean. It's a super-duper president. Tell us how you understand the reach of it. This is how you voted. Will you now own up to that explicitly, candidly, in public? My hunch is that if they did that, the Democrats would suddenly find this not exactly a congenial subject to keep discussing in this way. And if it's really true that the right to abortion, in their judgment, means a right that extends beyond the pregnancy, what we discover is that the very meaning of Roe versus Wade, 47 years later, is nowhere near as, quote, settled as a super precedent as people seem to affect that it is. But at the same time, I think if Hawley did this, I think the situation would be notably transformed by many of those Republicans sitting on the fence and the people like Susan Collins. Somebody would be transformed from them. It wouldn't be a position of their taking the line that Roe versus Wade should be overruled. Rather now, they would be more likely to see them saying, well, look, I'm not that pro-choice. I'm not that pro. I think there are some limits to abortion. If that's all we're dealing with, I'm willing to support some limits. And under those conditions, the Susan Collins's and Lisa Murkowski's may discover again what shows up in the surveys, that even people who call themselves pro-choice think that some abortions may rightly be restricted. I mean, the surveys we've seen over the years, even some people who call themselves pro-choice don't think that abortion should be used simply to improve finances in the family or even to help a pregnant woman finish college, dispose of the child so the child doesn't get in the way. You find that even people who are pro-choice think it's sensible and justified to restrict some. If the Murkowskis and Collinses of the world become alert to that point, it becomes far easier for them to vote to confirm conservative candidates. But at least we get the issue up front. And the real curiosity for me is why that the Republicans have not been using that issue and why even President Trump has not been using it. I mean, can you imagine what it might be like in a debate if Trump could turn to Joe Biden and say, this is what your party is doing. Can you tell us to now? Do you accept the position of your party? In your judgment, do you think that this right to abortion extends beyond the pregnancy itself and entails nothing less than the right to kill a child born alive? Just imagine the effect of putting that question to Joe Biden in a debate. And my astonishment is that why it doesn't happen and why that Trump doesn't raise it and why even other Republicans on the Hill are not bringing that issue forward as something that they could sort of induce Mr. Trump to use.
Hadley Arkus is our guest, Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College. We're talking about a proposed strategy for pro-life Republicans when we come back. Back to Josh Hawley and maybe a concession he shouldn't be making.
The irony, though, is that if they succeed, if they actually do tear this country down, dismantle it as they want to, then the luxury and freedom and comfort that they take for granted really will disappear. And they will finally get the authentic version of the oppression that they so desperately want.
Matt Walsh speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Unless we as the rational, we as the moral, we who understand objective truth, objective morality, unless we stand in the way for their sake and for our own.
You can watch and listen to Matt Walsh's presentation, Making the Case Against Woke Culture, with a recording of the 2020 Making the Case Conference. We'll send you links to download a podcast and watch a video stream for a tax-deductible contribution of $250. Find out more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Since 1978, Lutheran Church Extension Fund has had the humble privilege of supporting Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Ministries and her workers. Thanks to faithful investors, LCEF has provided thousands of church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations with the low-cost loans and resources they need to reach more people with the saving name of Christ. To learn more, visit lcef.org or call 800-843-5233, 800-843-5233.
Ad Crucem is proud to support Christian education for students of all ages. We offer posters of the Lord's Prayer, Martin Luther's morning and evening prayers, the Three Creeds, the Small Catechism, and more. Additionally, we offer baptism, confirmation, and marriage certificates. Stock up now for the new school year and ensure your learning environment is distinctively Lutheran with these quality products. Visit adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Bethlehem Lutheran, Altamont, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Azona, Texas. Grace Lutheran, San Mateo, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Lima, Ohio. Mount Calvary Lutheran, San Antonio, Texas. Peace Lutheran, Rapid City, South Dakota. Risen Savior Lutheran, Basor, Kansas. St. John Lutheran, Topeka, Kansas. St. Peter Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. And Zion Lutheran, Tacoma, Washington. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Thanks to Stacy in Bloomington, Minnesota, Carrie in Green Bay, Wisconsin, David in Troy, Michigan, and several other listeners for their financial gifts today for our new studios and offices. A generous donor has agreed to match up to $200,000 for the property purchase and the renovation. The entire cost is approximately $375,000. You can double your gift with a special tax-deductible donation for our new offices and studios. Just give us a call, 618-223-8385, or make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. We're talking about a proposed strategy for pro-life Republicans. Hadley Arkus is our guest. Hadley, you say that Senator Josh Hawley has, as you say, evidently absorbed the same state of mind as that jurisprudence against which he is now railing. What do you mean by that?
I meant that he said that abortion was an outrage. He said, well, what exactly was the outrage? Was it the withdrawal of the protections of the law from living human beings in the womb? No. He has taken the line taken by conservative jurisprudence for years. That is, the real problem with the case is that abortion is nowhere mentioned in the Constitution. Therefore, federal courts have no ground in which to articulate any rights on abortion emanating from the Constitution. But of course, there's no mention of marriage in the Constitution. In the 60s, when the Supreme Court struck down the laws that barred marriage across racial lines, and as Professor Jerry Bradley at Notre Dame has pointed out, the fact that marriage is not mentioned in the Constitution does not mean that the federal government has no reason to deal with marriage at many points in the military and diplomatic service, naturalization, people coming into the country, people carrying their marriages across state lines. The federal Constitution and the federal government has ample reason to deal with it. The fact that abortion is not mentioned in the Constitution does not mean that the federal government may not deal has any reason to deal with abortion in the military service and the diplomatic service, or with the abortion in the District of Columbia, or even the grounds on which states withhold the protections of the law from a certain class of their living beings within their own jurisdiction, namely unborn children. So Hawley's falling simply into the conventional lines of conservative jurisprudence here. He says the real outrage is not that the protection of the law have been held back from these unborn children, but the real wrong is that the issue has been taken out of the hands of voters in the states. In other words, there's been a critical transmutation of the wrong and a shift in the focus of just who the victim is. Instead of having the victim as the unborn child threatened by abortion, now, in Mr. Hawley's construction, the victim would be the voter in the separate state, voters in the separate states who are now deprived of their freedom to deliberate with fellow voters on the question of who is being protected by the laws of homicide in the state, and how do we balance the interests of the child against the interests and desires of the mother. It's a shift. What Hawley is really concerned about, I know, is the child in the womb and the wrong of abortion there. But when he argues against the Supreme Court, he is still imprisoned in this box of conservative jurisprudence. The only scheme he can see for apparently for criticizing the court is that it has moved outside this framework that's marked by the fact that there is no mention of abortion in the Constitution and that the issue belongs in the states. So the corrective now is simply to return the matter of abortion to the states. But if the outrage is really with the killing of children in the womb, well, shifting the matter back to the states does nothing to, well, does a little bit, of course, It allows states in the South and West and Midwestern places to protect the child, but it doesn't offer protections of that unborn child in states like New York, Illinois, California, Washington, Oregon, like that. So it's, again, I think Josh Hawley has been quite spirited here, and I think that if anything can be done in the Senate, where it should be done, to try to want to rekindle, you know, get going again, those powers of the political branches to sort of counter narrow decisions of the courts, it would be done by people like Josh Hawley take the initiative, as he did, along with Senator Mike Lee from Utah and Jim Lankford from Oklahoma. And a move was made to simply, in the aftermath of the Boston case on the transgender, to simply introduce the Equality Act that would now create those rights of the transgendered and in a statute. And it was brought forth to enact the bill passed in the House, to enact it in the Senate, if it could be done without objection. But happily, I think Josh Hawley stood up along with Jim Lankford and Mike Lee to register their objections. Okay, but now that they've registered their objections, they could do more as members of the Senate. That is, the Congress in the past made it clear. I mean, if you're open on this, Todd, what can be done? I mean, that Hawley as a senator can do far more than simply asking more demanding questions of people who would be judges. That carries the premise that the judges really are the ones who most decisively will be ruling us. But what he could do as a senator is deal with a statute. The Bostick case was done with a reading of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Congress in the past made it clear that the statute that forbade discrimination on the basis of sex would not threaten schools, colleges like Smith, on Holyoke in Massachusetts, Wellesley College, schools traditionally confined to women. In the same way, the Congress can simply renew that assurance. But in the same way, the Senate, the Congress, can step forward to indicate that it would protect women's teams, women's locker rooms, and women's bathrooms. But in doing that, they would sort of suggest that they're not fully on board. They register some objection to that decision made in the Bostick case. If that decision says that they were simply obliged to honor anyone's sense of his own gender identity, regardless of the objective truth of the matter. Well, the willingness of Hawley and the other senators to sort of start pushing back with this kind of legislation would mark a refusal simply to glide along with that decision made by the court, and setting a barrier, setting a limit there. They'd be posing some very critical premises that could be built on later.
Hadley Arkus is our guest. We're talking about a proposed strategy for pro-life Republicans. When we come back, what Senator Hawley and other pro-life Republicans can learn from Abraham Lincoln and his Congress when they countered the Dred Scott ruling. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is LCMSChaps at lcms.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. We're talking about a proposed strategy for pro-life Republicans. Hadley Arkus is our guest, professor emeritus of jurisprudence and American institutions at Amherst College and architect of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. Hadley, before the break, you were talking about using political branches in government to counter these narrow rulings of the court. Is that why you say that Senator Hawley can learn from Abraham Lincoln and his Congress as they countered the Dred Scott ruling?
Sure, because Ross Hittinger made the point that if Lincoln could not have lifted his hand on March 4th, 1861, taken an oath to support the Constitution, if it were thought that the Constitution contained a holding in the Dred Scott decision, that a man may not be dispossessed of his property and slaves when he enters the territory of the United States, as though that new right were part of the Constitution as that were woven now into the text. He couldn't do that. Remember, the Lincoln's position was that if the court takes the position here that Dred Scott is still a slave, we're not going to form a mob and undo the verdict and declare him to be free. That is to say, of respect for the judgment of the court compels us at the least to respect the outcome of the case in regard to the litigants of the case. But if we're not persuaded by the principle that articulated in the case, that a black cannot be a citizen of the United States, and it cannot be the bearer of rights, then the political branches cannot be obliged to act upon that premise when other issues come before them. And very early on, but first of all, Lincoln's Congress moved to refuse to recognize, to bar slavery from the Western territories of the United States, bar people from taking slaves into the Western territories, regardless of what was in Dred Scott. It virtually challenged the court to look at the case again, look at the issue again, and have a sober second look at the issue. But beyond that, the Lincoln administration faced, say, a case of a black student denied in Boston, denied a passport to study in France, and a black inventor denied a patent for an invention on the premises of the Dred Scott decision, that because blacks could not be citizens of the United States, they couldn't carry passports and get patents. Now, neither of those cases involved a black man litigating about his freedom. Both of them involved two different agencies of the federal government applying the principle of the Dred Scott decision in instances and cases remote from anything involved in Dred Scott. And what the Lincoln administration did, again, was to say, we respect the outcome of the Dred Scott case in regard to these litigants, but since we don't accept the principle, we're not obliged to act upon that principle in the cases coming before us. So they quashed both decisions. They issued the passport to the black student, and they issued the patent to the black inventor. Now, I think that that is not only a tenable decision, but it's the decision most consistent with the very character and principles of the Constitution. As we try to put it in our bill, in our version of the Born Alive bill, that if we were trying to say that if the court can articulate new rights, say a right to abortion, it should not be in a position to assign to itself a monopoly of the legislative authority in shaping that right. If the court can articulate a right to abortion, the legislative branch must be able to vindicate the same right on the same clause of the Constitution where the court professes to find it, and in filling out marking their limits. What should not be tenable is that the court can articulate a new right and assign to itself a monopoly of the legislative power in shaping that right. Now, this sense of things has been long lost from the memory of judges and lawyers, but it's still there. And the Democrats have invoked this at a number of times when the cases like the legislative veto and the War Powers Act, they say they take an uncongenial case and they confine it to the circumstances of the case. The Democrats seem to be able to apply the Lincolnian understanding when it suits them. So that sense of things has not been lost from our political class. It's a matter of summoning the memory to recall it again and bring it into play again, because, as I say, it is the construction that is most consistent with the character of the Constitution. But since it's been largely neglected, people have to be reminded of this. But one way of reminding them is for people like Judge Hawley to take the lead, along with his congenial colleagues in the Senate, like Mike Lee and Jim Lankford, Ted Cruz, and taking the lead, reminding us again that these are still issues within the powers of the Senate and the Congress to act upon. And they may be surprised at first what reactions they generate, but activating those powers again, flexing them again, it could be good for the health of senators, good that they get practiced, and good that they have the occasion again to recall to themselves powers that are rightfully within their reach.
Hadley Arkus is Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College, founder and director of the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding. He's architect of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act, author of several books, including Constitutional Illusions and Anchoring Truths, the Touchstone of the Natural Law, and a recent column for Public Discourse titled Josh Hawley and the Advantages of Jiu-Jitsu. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Hadley, thanks.
Always good to be with you, Todd.
Congratulations to Chaplain Matthew Prince on his promotion this week to Commander in the U.S. Navy Chaplain Corps. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces supports almost 200 chaplains who meet the needs of military personnel and their families. Learn more about their service at lcms.org/armed forces. Serving those who serve, LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armed forces. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., it's This Week in Pop Christianity. We'll talk with Chris Rosebro about Joel Osteen's sermon, You Are Good Seed. We'll have Dr. Mark Kalthoff of Hillsdale College answer the question, the United States Constitutional Republic or Democracy? And we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Jesus the Good Shepherd says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life." We invite you to join us as we listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd and follow him who gives us eternal life. Sunday worship services at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible class at 10:30, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri, on the web at goodshepherdarnold.org. That's goodshepherdarnold.org.